In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss the stair-step approach to launching products. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 222. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, Mike?
Well, last week I had talked a little bit about some of the Twitter and Facebook advertising campaigns that I was doing. Somebody pointed out to me that one of them was using this massive image that had not been resized properly. So it was like 700K on the page. Geez.
Nice.
And I resized it. It only needed to be 65K.
Oh, man. Now, was it impacting page load time? I mean, obviously it would have some impact, but it could be negligible. Even if it's like 0.3 seconds, like people are less like, you know, not that likely to notice.
The total page size was only about 2.5 megs. So you add, 700K to that, and it's like 3.2, which, it's about a third of the size, but it depends a lot more on latency at that point, I think, than anything else. And yeah. I don't think that it was a big deal, but with a file that size, depending on how long it takes to download that one and how your browser is probably only going to download that and maybe one other thing at a time.
Yeah, obviously if someone was hitting it on mobile or something, it would be a bigger deal, but you're probably not targeting mobile users, right?
No, for the most part, I think I excluded them. Although the Twitter ads, I don't know if those were excluded. I haven't really fully reviewed the results and stuff yet because it just ended, but I need to go back in and take a look at those things to see if it impacted at all. But I've got data so I can go back and adjust things anyway. I'm probably never going to know for sure whether it had that much of an impact, but it was a stupid mistake.
If that's the worst thing that happens to you this week, I'd consider yourself lucky.
Right. The other thing I noticed was that on the Twitter ads, because I'm experimenting over there. I haven't really run Twitter ads before, but when a Twitter ad is finished, it's like if you give it a dollar amount, when it's done, it's listed as being exhausted.
Nice. I like that. It's so tired that it just has to stop.
Yep.
That's cool. So continuing with my stretch of reading a lot of books, I have a couple other books I wanted to mention today. The first one, it's called How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. And it's a pretty thick book. I think it was 20-something hours on audio, which is more than I tend to attack. But it's by a reporter from Mashable, and he basically wanted to write the definitive history of Star Wars and how Lucas came up with the concepts and how he was influenced, and then the launch of all six films and the re-releases and all the controversies around it. And I mean, he really goes in depth. So I was super impressed with the quality of the research. I'm a Star Wars fan. I have been since I was a kid. I've seen the movies a lot of times, and I know a lot of trivia, but this guy dove in way deeper than anything I'd ever read. So if you're at all interested in that, or even if you're not a Star Wars fan, it's fascinating to hear just how every movie pushed Lucas to the breaking point, whether it was the financial breaking point or to kind of the sanity breaking point. It reminds me of launching a startup. It pushed him to the edge so many times where he struggled even to complete the movie. And highly recommend this book. The other book is called In and Out. And this is one, if you have considered reading it, I would kind of recommend against it. I really love hearing startup tales, and In-N-Out is a hamburger chain on the west coast of the United States, and they've stayed private, right? They're privately owned, they're not franchised, and they still basically have the same menu that they did when they launched in the 50s. So it's a really cool story about kind of a business that's staying small, even though they're a couple hundred restaurants around the west coast of the U.S. But the book itself was not very well researched, not very well written. And overall, I would just say, if it's on your wish list, I would probably take it off. I was pretty disappointed with it. It felt very surfacey. It was kind of like this happened next, and then this happened. And the other thing I didn't like is it also portrayed, it was really pro In-N-Out. It kept saying, and then due to the founder's will and determination, they launched another 10 stores. But it wasn't like, they had to have done something negative, over those 50 years. And it really kind of skipped over that. I mean, it wasn't a harrowing tale. It was more of an encyclopedia or a long Wikipedia entry about it. Today's episode was inspired by a question from Chris Cottom, and he says, I really liked how Rob illustrated his path through small one-time sale products to recurring revenue SaaS apps in his MicroConf Europe talk this year. So Chris obviously attended MicroConf Europe. And he says, I think it would make a great topic for a podcast. So what I wanted to do today is talk through the stair-step approach to launching, really launching any type of products, but we're going to focus more on software products today. And the, you know, Mike and I have tossed out concepts from the stair-step approach for years on the podcast, but it wasn't until really DCBKK and then MicroConf Europe that I decided to sit down and formulate it and make it concrete. So I spent, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes with a slide and kind of demonstrated how I view this stair-step approach, how it works and all that. And it seemed to really resonate with people because it's kind of a framework for getting started and moving from beginner to intermediate to advanced. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. So the stair-step approach, it really has three steps that I talked about at the conferences. I've added a fourth step that we'll talk about here that I'm still kind of formulating and figuring out what it means and if it's even a good step to go to. But what I want you to imagine is a set of stairs. And there's the obviously step one is on the bottom, and then step two is above that, step three is above that. And each step gets a little more challenging, and but you step up to that step once you have more experience, okay? So step one is what I think is the approach that I would recommend if you're just starting out today and you don't have any products with any revenue, because the problem that we see is folks are coming in and they're seeing what successful people are doing. So they look at Heaton Shaw, Jason Cohen, Patrick McKenzie, whoever, and they say, well, they're doing SaaS apps, so I'm going to do a SaaS app. And I don't always think that's the right choice because SaaS apps are, it's a very long, slow SaaS ramp of death to grow the revenue. It is very complicated to build them. It's hard to market them, et cetera, et cetera. Instead, I want you to imagine step one as of consisting of products with one-time sales, right? So imagine a WordPress plugin or maybe a mobile app or a Magento add-on or a Photoshop add-on or even an ebook. So these are just one-time sales and the price point is not huge. And in addition, think about it as a single traffic channel, okay? So examples of a single traffic channel might be it gets all its traffic from SEO, or 90% of its traffic from SEO, or it gets all of its traffic from WordPress.org, from the plugin repo. Or I know folks selling things is more physical goods, but their entire channel, sales channel, is Amazon, where their entire funnel consists of YouTube. And so that's the step one. The benefits here are that you are starting small with something simple to get some revenue in the door and learn this whole process.
I think one of the overlooked aspects of this is that it can be a lot easier to sell something that's a one-time sale, or you know, something that people just buy into upfront and they don't have this recurring payment that they have to keep paying to keep using it afterwards. And people mentally think of that differently than they do the one-time sale. So it's easier to convince people to do this, and it helps give you that fundamental understanding of how sales work and how you can convince people to buy using different marketing messages, because the marketing messages for example, for a book are radically different for the customers than you would for like a recurring revenue model for just about anything. So whether it's a book or a physical product, you know, any of those types of things, or even just a downloadable application or even a mobile app, those things have a fundamentally different message inside of the marketing material and how you go about onboarding people and marketing to them. You know, there's a difference between the different types of channels that you're going to be able to use for those one-time products versus like a you know, something that's a more of a SaaS model.
Right, and that's the idea here, is to get some experience writing marketing copy, supporting a product, just pushing a product out to market, like launching and doing something in public. A lot of folks have never done that, and it's really terrifying the first time you do that. So I shudder to think of the absolute beginner who has never launched anything in public trying to build a SaaS app and launch that with all the complexities involved in that, in terms of, you know, marketing support, the code, sales, just everything that's involved. This is such a simpler way to do it and to kind of cut your teeth in. Maybe it's the minor leagues, or maybe it's college ball instead of jumping right to the pros. And we all need to go through that development, right? You can't just jump up to the hardest task right away. And we see a lot of folks having success with this approach. A lot of Micropreneur Academy members are doing this. There's WordPress plugins, Magento add-ons, you know, one-off ebooks. And they you know, you may not make 10 grand a month, and you're very likely not going to make 10 grand a month from this thing. You're not going to quit your job in step one, but that's not the point. The point is to get experience and gain confidence in your skills and learn one tool. See, I always like to think of it as like, I have a tool belt of marketing approaches. And when I first started out, the tool belt was empty and I had no tools on that. But the first thing I learned, I'm pretty sure it was SEO. And so then I had SEO in my tool belt. And the next thing was AdWords. And that was like the second product I had. So then I had SEO and AdWords. And I started acquiring and building products that I knew I could market with SEO and AdWords. And so if you learn the ins and outs of SEO or AdWords or Amazon or WordPress.org or YouTube or any other single traffic channel, and then you build a fairly simple product that sells for $20 to $50 a pop, you're going to learn a ton from doing that. And with that confidence and with a little bit of revenue, that's where you start moving up into step two. And step two is basically to repeat step one until you own your time. It's until you are making enough money that you can buy out either your salaried gig or any consulting work you're doing. And an example of this is a colleague of mine, friend of ours, has three WordPress plugins now, and he basically has bought out his time. He didn't do it with just one, right? It wasn't this big splash, and it didn't happen right away, but he learned how to build and launch a WordPress plugin, how to market it, how to do all the support, and how to do all that stuff, and then got one to market, and then basically has repeated that twice. And at this point, he actually quit his job this month. This path, like from step one to step two, is a lot easier than trying to jump straight up to the most complex task.
The nice thing behind doing that is that once you've done something once, it makes it a little bit easier to do it the second time, especially if you're repeating almost the same process, because you can use the things that you learned from the first iteration through that process on the second time and the third time and the fourth time. And eventually what you're doing is you're growing this revenue base that you're going to be able to use to essentially replace what your current revenue stream is.
Right. And the interesting thing with this stair-step approach is that I kept seeing it with people in the academy, people at MicroConf, and I kept seeing them kind of start small and then build up and eventually, you know, get to the next level and being able to buy out their time. And I noticed it as a pattern, which is why I kind of started thinking about trying something to try to classify it or like have a higher level theory about it. Then I looked back at my own experience and realized that a lot of what I did fits the stair step retroactively. And I had no idea about that. But if you look back at products I owned, I had .NET Invoice, which is one-time sale downloadable software. I had Apprentice Lineman Jobs, which is essentially, it's a job board and it's a subscription, but it's very short lived. People only look for 1 or 2 months. So it's a small price point. And it had a single source of traffic, SEO. CMS Themer, which was a theming service, was also a one-time sale. It was a higher price point, but it had one source of traffic, which was actually banner ads. And then I had a couple ebooks that I had purchased about in random topics like beginner bonsai. And there was one about building a duck hunting boat. And all of these things had a single source of traffic, and none of them made more than that. Maybe they topped, some of them topped out at between three and four grand a month. But each one of them taught me one more thing. It was either SEO or AdWords or banner ads or PPC advertising or copywriting and how much it takes to support a software product versus an info product. And so it's really interesting that I essentially followed this path, kind of stumbled into it.
What Rob has done, for example, is, you know, he had .NET Invoice and Apprentice Lineman Jobs and CMS Themer, which are all in completely unrelated areas. But if you kind of map things out in advance, you can make those things into the same business or, you know, address different problems inside of the same market vertical such that you are building upon your previous audience. So essentially, you have this lower end product that is a one-time sale, and then you look upstream a little bit and say, okay, well, what is the next step? What is the product that somebody who has purchased this and actually implemented it would use after this? So essentially what you're doing is you're creating this closed feedback loop where the customers that you're bringing in hopefully purchase the first product, and then you may very well be able to get them to buy into the second. So depending on where they come into the process, you may have additional higher end products that you can sell them. And your initial product might be a info product or a book of some kind, and then you might sell some specialized consulting services services around that. And then you might have a SaaS app or something along those lines. And it's you're basically just moving up the sales funnel, maybe with higher price points. But you don't have to do that in advance. And there's certainly places where that's not only not warranted, but you just simply can't do that. But that's an approach that you can think about.
And that's a mistake that I made early on was I, as you said, I did it in disparate niches. And so I did not have the advantage of building, you know, either an audience or more likely just a customer base that I could then sell more things to. And that's the one thing with the stair-step approach. I wouldn't say it's required that you do it that way, you know, that you keep it all in the same market, but it's definitely going to be easier for you if you can, because it's always easier to sell a new product to your existing customers or an existing product to new customers, right? But it's never good to sell, or it's never good to sell a new product to new customers unless you absolutely have to. So I think that will give you a leg up if you take that focus. On the other hand, it was either me or maybe the podcast received an email from someone saying, I want to start the stair-step approach, but I'm thinking if I want it to all be in the same niche, then I need to think, you know, 5 years out, because what I launch today has to relate to everything I build in step two, and then this the recurring revenue app I'm going to launch in step three. And I think you could put a little too much importance on that initial product at that point. Right, I think if you're holding off because you're just not sure you want to be in this niche for 5 years, then I think you're overthinking it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, because I think that if you're starting out, you don't necessarily want to try to plan that far out in advance, because you may very well launch this, you know, one-time purchase and it may not go anywhere. It may just be that, you know, the market doesn't want what you have to offer, or that there's not enough money there, or that you can't reach those people. There's all these problems that I can see with that. And if you aren't sure of all of those things and you're trying to plan around all of these, this vast sea of unknowns, you can very well talk yourself out of doing anything at all before you kind of map everything out. And at that point, you're basically just wasting a heck of a lot of time planning for things that are just never going to occur.
So then step three is basically getting recurring sales. And in our world, this typically means SaaS. It doesn't always have to be that way, but I think that's the kind of the direction you move. And the, you know, what are the benefits of SaaS? We've talked about it before. It's the fact that you don't have to get a large sale up front. You can get a smaller sale every month from that group of customers. And there are pros and cons to this that we discussed 10 or 15 episodes ago. But the bottom line is, if you want to build a sustainable revenue stream, then having one-time sales is not the way to do it. And so step three is, you know, going after recurring sales. And examples of this, I mean, they're all around us, right? It's, you know, app like Barometrics or BidSketch or Drip, PlanScope, or even, you know, there's like recurring info products like Breck Palumbo, who's a, you know, Micropreneur Academy member and host of Bootstrap with Kids podcast. He has distressedpro.com, which is, there's some software to it, but there's also a lot of training. I mean, we have, you know, micropreneur.com, the Micropreneur Academy, which is essentially training. There's no software involved with that. So there, you can go both ways. It doesn't just have to be software. And even productized services, I think, could fit into this level if you get folks to sign up for a subscription for them.
Yeah, I mean, most of this conversation today is limited much more towards the software side of things and getting started. But you know, you're absolutely right that there's a lot of other ways to have different upsells for people that, you know, they can quote unquote buy into, you know, whether that's with their wallets or with their mentality. I mean, if you look at what we've done with the Micropreneur Academy, in some ways you can look at it as a complete sales funnel where we've got, you know, our blogs and you know, our online profiles, but we've also got the podcast, which is free to everybody. And then if you want to buy into the Micropreneur Academy and that, those types of approaches and that community, you know, there's a $50 a month price point with that. And then upstream from that is MicroConf. And there's a lot of different ways that that whole life cycle of products could be viewed. And, you know, this is the stair-step approach is kind of falls in line with that.
Yeah, I agree. If you even just think about our ecosystem as a funnel, and I don't think either of us really intentionally did this, but there's all these things that kind of feed into each other. So you have, you know, my book is one thing that certain people hear about my book from the podcast and from MicroConf, but other people hear about my book from something else, and then they later listen to the podcast or become an Academy member or buy a MicroConf ticket. And all of four of those things really feed into each other. Brennan Dunn's another guy who's done this really well, right? Is set up, you know, he has multiple ebooks and podcasts and a blog and his software product, and he runs training, you know, in-person training. And so that all fits in. And he I will actually say that he kind of stair-stepped it in the wrong order, right? Like, he launched the SaaS first, and it was so hard to get traction that he went back and, you know, started writing ebooks and stuff to make money, and then realized that the experience he gained there and kind of the audience that he built fed back into it. And I don't think you need, the stair-step approach is not about building an audience. I don't think you need to be a personal brand or build an audience to do this. But I do think that building a customer base and then learning these skills, how to launch, how to market, how to copyright, all that stuff, is the key to it. So don't feel like you have to be a big personal brand in order to make that work or even have this big ecosystem of products. I don't necessarily think. I think that if you got to step two, and you had your WordPress plugins and you decided, I'm going to launch a SaaS app, and you sold those WordPress plugins enough, you know, to give you a runway to then go build the SaaS and grow it, I don't think that's a terrible decision. You know, I mean, I'd take it on a case-by-case basis, but I think that's an option. You don't necessarily have to keep everything as you're moving up the stair steps.
I agree with that point, that that's one option, and there are certainly viable reasons for saying, oh, okay, I've already got this one product, but I want to do something completely different. And I think both of them are valid approaches. So going back to what Brennan had done, where he'd kind of done things out of order, we did things out of order with the Micropreneur Academy as well, because we launched the Academy first, and has a subscription model to it. And then we did the podcast, which is kind of, you know, downstream from that. And then we did the conference, which is upstream from that. So we did things in the wrong order as well, but it's not something that we planned out front. We just kind of, I'll say, fell into it and decided what is it that we want to do next and what are people looking for. So sometimes you just need to get into the market to kind of figure out where things need to go or where they should go. And where they should go in some cases may very well be in a completely different market because you don't want to deal with it anymore.
Exactly. And then step four is something I'm still mulling over. I did not mention this in the MicroConf Europe or the DCBKK talk. I kind of mentioned it offhand. I think step four might be having multiple recurring apps, you know, multiple SaaS apps or something. But to be honest, few companies or people that I've seen are able to maintain this, because basically one eventually takes the lead and makes so much money that the others kind of seem inconsequential. And so if you look at what 37 Signals did, an example, they just kept launching apps. And then Basecamp, you know, I'm assuming 10x'd or 100x'd everything else. And at that point, it's just hard to devote giving any time to something that's making you 10 grand a month when something's making you $1 million a month, as an example. I don't know their numbers, but you get the idea. So there are a few companies like Wildbit does this. They have multiple SaaS apps. Certainly, you and I have multiple projects going on. So I obviously have I have multiple SaaS apps plus, you know, the Academy and a conference and stuff. So it's not impossible to do, but I have definitely found it hard as some of my apps grow and they 10x other apps in my portfolio. I have a really hard time going back to those apps that are making the small amounts. And I think at that point, that's when you want to like sell one off or shut it down even if it's not worth selling. So I'm not sure that the step four is aspirational. You know, I don't know that getting to multiple recurring is really necessary. I do like that it diversifies you. So when I had issues, you know, Hittails revenue took a hit when Google did the not provided stuff, and it was nice that I had other revenue streams. But I'm not sure that necessarily trying to manage multiple SaaS apps or multiple recurring revenue streams should be a goal for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what Basecamp has been doing, even over the past 4 or 5 years, I mean, they used to have, I think it was called Sortfolio, and they got rid of that. You know, they're right now in the middle of the process of getting rid of things like HiRise and, you know, changing their company name from 37 Signals to Basecamp and getting rid of all of the other things that they've built and they've sold and launched and been successful with them, but they haven't been nearly as successful. And, you know, they spell out in fairly large detail on their blog and in a lot of their communications that, you know, we're getting rid of all these other things because they serve as distractions. And I was at the Business of Software. I even met somebody who was kind of heading up one of the business units that they're essentially spinning off and saying, okay, we're going to take this entire product that is making money that could fully support at least a couple of people and just get rid of it because it is taking time away from our core business, and that's where we make our money. And even in the stuff that I've done, and Rob, obviously in the stuff that you've done, there's things where you get to a certain point where you just don't want to work on them anymore because it's not worth the time or you lose motivation for it. And at that point, it becomes a mental drain because it's always in the back of your mind thinking, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I should devote some time to that, or you're coming up with ideas for it. But if you don't even own it anymore, it's a lot easier to not think about it.
That's right. And that's always something that you have to weigh, is whether to sell it and walk away or to keep it running in the background, because there is a mental weight to it, like you said. You know, I think if you're listening to this stair-step approach, I think you could feasibly be skeptical and say, well, if I ultimately want a SaaS app, want to launch a SaaS app, why would I start with a small product, you know? And maybe you really don't want to launch a small WordPress plugin. You just want to do SaaS because that's what, I don't know, what the cool kids are doing or something. I think that the optimal way and the way to maximize your chance of ultimately being successful at it is to do something like this, a stair-step approach. But I think there are other avenues. I think if you were to, say, intern within a bootstrap SaaS app and have someone mentor you and teach you the ropes, that you could feasibly learn it without doing it yourself and then go launch your own SaaS app. So I do think there are other ways around it. They're just a lot less common, and they're going to be harder to find, because, you know, how many of those opportunities are there compared to how many people are there who are able to go launch a WordPress plugin and kind of go up the stair step?
Yeah, I almost look at the different steps as learning experiences where somehow you have to figure out the knowledge within that particular arena. The stair-step approach is obviously one method for doing it. Doing some sort of a mentorship would be another method. And then going straight to step three and beating your head against the wall a lot to figure out all the different things that you should have learned in step one and step two, that's another mechanism for doing it. But there's the risk of going straight to that step and beating your head against the wall so many times that you get frustrated and you just give up. So I think that there's definitely some inherent risks there, but there are also some very clear exceptional cases out there where people have successfully gone straight to step three. And I would say that in some cases, not all of them, but some cases, those are used as examples of, this is exactly how you build a software product, and this is exactly how you build a company from the ground up. And I'll point specifically to 37 Signals for that, because I think a lot of people have held them up on an altar and said, this is exactly how you do it. And we scratched our own itch. This is the way to do it. And then you've got all these other people who are going out and scratching their own itch for a product that not everybody's going to pay for. So there are definitely ways to do it. And there are, I'll say, red flags for other ways that it can be done, but are not necessarily going to be successful. I mean, success is not, something that you can just say is going to happen. There's a lot of red flags, but there's also ways around some of those red flags.
I think 37 Signals would have been successful whenever they had done it. I mean, they're very smart, and they're great businessmen, and they build things people want and all that. But I don't know that they would have grown to how large they are, as quickly as they did, without their timing. You know, they really hit SaaS at the early stage, right as the kind of the concept was taking off, and they got in first, and they really did a first mover's advantage, and which I think is great, because they took a risk and it paid off for them. But I think that, in the decade since Basecamp was launched, I think it launched around 2005-ish, a lot of things have changed. And so maybe 5-6 years ago, still going directly into SaaS, I could see that potentially working. I don't think it was nearly as competitive as it is today. So many people want to launch SaaS. It really is something that the funded companies are talking about, B2B is talking about it, B2C is talking about it. I mean, it really is something a lot of people are aspiring to. And as a result, a lot of people are doing it. And a lot of the niches that didn't have SaaS apps a few years ago have them now. And so that's where it's just become so much more difficult to do it, that I think jumping straight into the deep end of the pool is going to fail more often than not. And that's not to say it can't succeed sometimes. And as you said, there are examples of people who've done it, and even examples of people who've done it more recently. But what I tend to find is, if you dig into their stories a little more, someone might say, Josh Pigford with Barometrics, he launched a SaaS app and it was successful. But if you look back at his story, he basically had two other smaller apps. He did stuff before that. I mean, he has it's 10 years to overnight success type thing. And you could say the same about me, right? Someone say, he has a successful SaaS app with Drip, but it's like, I have this whole long history of launching smaller things and then moving up this ladder. So it's not that it can't be done. I just think it's done a lot less often, especially these days.
Right. And as you've moved up that ladder, you've built things that are more and more complicated. You know, like a duck boat ebook is a relatively uncomplicated thing, but you get to something like Drip, and that's very complicated. There's a lot of moving parts that are constantly moving and shifting, whereas, selling somebody an ebook on how to build a duck boat is relatively straightforward in comparison.
That's right.
But if you take that example of how to build a duck boat as an ebook, you can translate that to one section of a marketing campaign that you might run for Drip. So essentially, I'll say it becomes, you know, all those things that come up in step one and step two basically become these modules of knowledge that you kind of drop into place when you get into things that are a lot more complicated and become a lot more successful because of the modular learning process that you went through before.
That's exactly right. Each one is a like you said, a module that fits together. I think that's a good analogy.
If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsforrestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.